I'm Mark Bayshore. You've got Current State here for Wednesday. Author and critic Touré will visit Grand Rapids on Thursday to take part in a program called Identity and Bias, Impact on Individuals and Institutions. Now, Touré has written extensively on subjects ranging from music to politics to black life in America. He's also been a TV personality on shows like MSNBC's The Cycle. Earlier this week, Current State Scott Pohl spoke with Touré about his role as a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominating committee and his book about Prince, I Would Die for You. Today we have the second part of that interview. Scott Pohl questions Touré about the Black Lives Matter movement, the presidential campaign, and his 2011 book, Who's Afraid of Post-Blackness? What It Means to Be Black Now, beginning with what he means by the phrase post-blackness.
We're just talking about viewing, performing, or embodying blackness in any way that you wish. It does not mean post-racial or a sort of leaving of blackness, but leaving the idea that blackness is one specific thing, is performed one specific way, and suggesting you can be black in any way that you want. It seemed to me like some people seem to feel like, you know, blackness was this fragile identity that required, you know, constant relationship to the hood, you know, like the hood was the refrigerator and blackness was milk. And the further it got away from the refrigerator, the more it would spoil and be useless. But, you know, that's not the case at all, that this is portable and flexible and fluid, and you know, you can perform or embody blackness in many, 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 many ways.
In the 5 years since its publication, have any of your conclusions changed in the 5 years since it was published?
I wouldn't say that the conclusion has changed. I would write an entirely different book if I was to start on that journey again, in terms of, you know, let's do a book that sort of takes the temperature of where I think, you know, Black America is. If I was writing now, or, you know, any time in the last two years, I would do something much darker, much more serious, you know, something dealing with, you know, the Black Lives Matters issues, the new Jim Crow issues, you know, the mass incarceration, war on drugs sort of stuff. I'm proud of that book, but I think that it is very spiritual and poetic, and that has its place, but we also need to deal with the serious, difficult stuff. And that's not what I chose to do in that book, but then, you know, the response I got, and the way that history has gone after that, makes me say, you know, what I would feel necessary to do now would be dealing with more of the harder stuff.
We're talking with writer and TV personality Touré. He'll be in Grand Rapids for an event on April 21st. I'd like to ask you about a few issues related to racial politics and the current racial climate in the country. One thing I wanted to ask you about is some of the protests that have occurred at public appearances by presidential campaigns, and not so much about the protests themselves, but how the candidates and their surrogates like Bill Clinton have handled those protests. Do you have some thoughts on people speaking up at campaign events like that and how the candidates choose to react to them?
I mean, I have no problem with Black Lives Matter being aggressive in how they get their message out, and I think that it's interesting that that is the special interest group that has had a greater impact on this election than any other. And I find it really valuable that instead of pressing the right to do better when we know they're not going to, and they're consistently horrendous on these issues, that they have pushed the left from the left, and not even really from the left all the time, but just they have pushed the left to be better. And this is the first time in my lifetime that I can remember the Black groups pushing the Democratic Party to really earn their vote. Because black people, going back to LBJ and to a certain extent back to FDR, are voting in massive numbers for the Democratic Party. But when do we demand that they do something to earn that? And Black Lives Matter is doing that. And I don't have a problem with them going directly to a candidate at a public rally and demanding that, you know, we speak about this issue now. You know, if a candidate is not prepared to answer an important question from a citizen, then they have a problem and they need to think about what their answer should be. And, you know, we see in Bernie, for one, somebody who has developed over time in his answer, right? It's the first time he got interrupted, it was disastrous for him. And he has learned over time how to, you know, how to deal with them. And Hillary has, too. The Bill Clinton moment was really difficult, you know? I mean, because I love him. You know, he was the first president I voted for. You know, the first Democratic president of my adult life, and, you know, extremely charismatic. You know, I mean, I was an Arsenio watcher when he came on the Arsenio Hall show. So it's kind of like, you know, symbolic of how Bill Clinton was like, I will come into your world and, you know, tip my cap to you to let you know, I care about you. I mean, everybody focuses on Arsenio because it's such good video. But he was also on MTV, on an MTV forum that fall, and somebody asked him if he wore boxers or briefs. And I mean, like, you know, it was this great television moment. So, you know, there was this deep love for him beyond, you know, your relationship with a normal politician. So then to see him sort of at verbal war with Black Lives Matter, this group that means a lot to me, that I think is really doing important work, was sort of like, wow, like, you know, two people I really care about are like at odds, and you can't sit on the fence. You got to pick one or the other. And, you know, reading what Michelle Alexander wrote about Clinton's tenure and what happened out of the 94 crime bill and you know, what was in it and where it came from politically and where it went, you know, he did not stand up to the demagoguing that the right was doing, and he swallowed it and tried to be even further. And that was hugely detrimental to the black community. And Hillary's going to have to do better.
Do you think that's part of why Hillary Clinton enjoys such wide support amongst black voters, though, the relationship to the way they feel about her husband? And why do you think Bernie Sanders struggles to appeal to African Americans?
Yes, the first question. I mean, Hillary definitely has inherited Bill's support among African Americans, which the Democratic nominee tends to enjoy, and she has seemed like the incumbent the entire time. It's interesting because Bernie has Ta-Nehisi Coates behind him, Rosario Dawson behind him, Spike Lee behind him. But, I mean, you know, he's got some really really interesting, extraordinary black people behind him. And I don't necessarily, I mean, I think a lot of people make some of these decisions emotionally, and there's nothing sort of at a gut level that suggests, you know, Bernie understands. But I mean, you know, he's a politician from an extraordinarily white area, you know, and out of that, clearly, he is, you know, he's shaped his politics and his instincts in a way that did not have to encompass what black Americans need. And do I think that he would do the right thing if he became president? Absolutely. But, you know, he's a guy who's been on the wrong side of many gun votes, as far as I'm concerned, and isn't able to really speak about sort of black issues with the sort of ease and fluency that we would hope for.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you to comment on Donald Trump's campaign for president. And while we're talking about Republicans, what did you make of Dr. Ben Carson's campaign?
I mean, you know, I thought Dr. Ben's campaign was, I mean, if I said it was embarrassing, that would imply that I accept that there's some refracted, you know, opinion, like what you think of Ben Carson that refracts somehow onto me and other black people. And I don't know that I'm not sure if that's really happening. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You know, I mean, I found his entire campaign to be extremely problematic. I mean, he's politically very juvenile, the way that he speaks, the things he speaks about. I just couldn't take anything about that campaign seriously at all. I mean, you know, the Trump campaign is the inevitable end, you know, of allowing talk radio to define the agenda, of allowing, you know, obstruction and an attack on government and a philosophy of being anti-government and wanting to make government so small you would strangle it in the bathtub, but then not actually killing government. So then eventually somebody would come along and say, they've been promising you anti-government and not doing it. I can out-Republican them. I can outright them by saying, I'm not from politics, so I'll do it better than them. Like, of course that would eventually be the next answer. You know, this sort of politics of anger and fear that they've been playing on for 50 some years, that of course had to, you know, just keep going to the nth degree. And this seems like pretty much the nth degree. I mean, like, the Trump voter makes the Tea Party look like a bunch of wimps, you know. It's crazy. It's a bit scary to see the anger and the bile and the vitriol sort of coming out so publicly in this way, you know. And I think it's detrimental to America already. And another several months of him running his mouth on the national stage would be further detrimental to America. But, you know, we have one party in the country that is barely functioning, that isn't really for anything, and is in government to try to make government not work. That doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Author and commentator Touré will be part of Forum 2016 in Grand Rapids at DeVos Place on April 21st. It's sponsored by Partners for a Racism-Free Community in Grand Rapids. Touré, thank you.
Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.